Hey, welcome into the Big Ten Huddle. I'm your host, JR. I've got a lot to talk about going on in the Big Ten. It's the basketball episode. I'm joined tonight with Russ from the Boiler Express podcast. Russ, Merry Christmas. How's the Christmas season going for you?
It's good. It's good. It started early because my daughter's birthday was the 16th. So we have like early present season and family season. And now this weekend we'll start to get into actual Christmas. So we've kind of got a head start a little bit on that. So, but appreciate you having me back on here. Look forward to talking the next hour and a half, hour and 45 about Edie blocking Steph Curry tonight. So look forward
Let's
to it.
start there. Let's start there. Listen, I was just telling you before we came on, I'm not a huge NBA fan, which is like kind of weird for somebody that podcasts about college basketball because normally those people also watch the NBA. But I can say the same thing with football. I'm not really a huge NFL fan either. I just like college athletics more than anything. If I'm watching the NBA, I'm doing my best to tune in to Zach Edey because I love watching him in the NBA, man.
Yeah, and he's definitely taking some grudges with him. So if you're watching him, you know, when he comes up on those UConn players or, you know, a certain player from the state of Tennessee, he gets a little chippy. He is not backing down from anybody.
No, he's not. No, he's not at all. So, we will talk more about Purdue as the show goes on. Of course, Edie doing his thing with the Grizzlies in the NBA. But before we can get into the Purdue matchup and stuff like that with Auburn, we need to recap the week of college basketball in the Big Ten so far. So, Russ, let's start with these seven games that happened Tuesday and Wednesday. Now, we're going to spend most of our time talking about Michigan, Oklahoma, and I have some thoughts on Washington State we'll get into. But for the most part, we'll kind of stick with these seven games, and then we'll get a commercial break and then go into the preview stuff here soon. But Russ, I want to get your thoughts on Michigan, Oklahoma first. All right. So this Michigan team, they beat Wisconsin late in the game, and I think that was a really good point for them. I think that was a good building block for them, and they're having a good season. Things are going well. And then they lose to Arkansas late in that game. They were up good amount there in the second half, and then they fall, and Arkansas comes back, wins that game. Similar here with Oklahoma, but they were there right at the end, and then Roddy Gale fouls Jeremiah Fears, yeah, I keep getting them mixed up. Jeremiah Fears, they foul him at the end of the game. He gets the 4-point play, goes up by one, and then Michigan can't score. I think it was Trey Donaldson that took the final shot there on the final possession. I mean, I guess first off, let's start with this. Was it a foul? Because there was a lot of people having some discourse about that, and then your just general thoughts on the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was a foul because they called it a foul, right? I mean, I honestly, you know, I'm a bigger fan of the if you're up three, foul them. You know, before they get a shot off, because this is the kind of thing, this is worst case scenario. Like, you know, it's one thing if they hit the three, but you get in their space enough that you make the ref have to make a call possibly, then that's kind of on your defense. Like, that's the one thing you don't want to do is foul on a 3-point attempt. And not only did you foul on a 3-point attempt, he hits it, give him the game winning free throw. But I mean, my whole thing was, you know, Michigan played a pretty decent game against them. And one of the things they've struggled with this year is turning the ball over. And as a whole, they did good in that game. Only had 10 turnovers versus like average almost 15, I think, on the season. But then it was a key turnover at the very end when they're up, got the lead. All you got to do is hold on to the ball, at least get an attempt up or force a foul, and they turn it over, and that costs them the game. So I, you know, I think it's just it's a sign that the good things are to come for Michigan, but they've still, you know, they've still got some work to do.
Yeah, they definitely still have some work to do, and it's hard to look at with this Michigan team and say what work needs to be done because I do think they are a talented team, and I do think that you're getting what you're asking for out of like your role support players, right? Like Roddy Gale in this game scored 10 plus points. Trey Donaldson in this game scored 10 plus points. Your front court of Danny Wolf and Vlad Goldin were running this game for you, kind of like you want. Like, this was a game when it felt like pretty much everything you wanted to happen for Michigan, other than the 3-point shooting, and there were some turnover stretches in this game as well. Other than those, things were going well for Michigan in it. And then toward the end of the game, that's actually when Michigan starts hitting their threes too. So it's not like they were hitting their threes at the beginning and then not hitting them later on. They started hitting them later in the game, which was good for them. But I mean, at a certain point, we have to look at this Michigan team and say, what's the missing piece? Like, what is that thing that they need to do late in these games? Because you've seen it now twice with Arkansas and now Oklahoma, which By the way, Oklahoma, good team. I didn't give them enough credit the other day when I was talking about them on the show. They're undefeated now. Jeremiah Fears is a rock star. I love his game. I want to say it's a good backcourt is your biggest issue because Michigan kind of falls asleep on defense, i.e. Roddy Gale. I know that from watching him at Ohio State for enough years. He kind of keeps doing that, but I don't know if it's just that. Like, I feel like there's something on the offense with this team as well. Do you have any thoughts there, Russ?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that could also be just a, you know, attributed to they're still gelling, right? It's a brand new team, you know, a lot of transfers, new guys coming in, and you've got to figure out how to gel and everybody get their shots. But yeah, their backcourt and their assist percentage is, you know, their turnover percentage is high, like I said, and a lot of times that's attributed most to your guard play. And you know, if they can figure that out, it feels a lot like, you know, some of those Purdue teams, you know, before they won back-to-back titles where they, you know, if you just get a solid point guard that can lock it down, not turn the ball over, get the ball in the right scorer's hands, that could be all the difference for this Michigan team. And I want to know, too, did his brother call him? Did Jeremiah's brother call him and be like, hey, just so you know, like, this is your only shot. I get him twice, but help me out. Like, give him a taste of the family medicine, you know?
Right. Yeah. Give him a little bit of taste here. I definitely think that happened. I definitely think they shared a phone call beforehand. Okay. So I have a thought, and this might be a very good take by the end of the season, or it could be a take that roasts me for the entire year. So Russ, you let me know if this is a good take or a bad take. Okay. I feel like Danny Wolf is the best player on this Michigan team. But I also simultaneously feel like Danny Wolf is the reason why this Michigan team is not a contender for the Big Ten and is just ultimately an NCAA tournament team, probably a round two team. I think that Dusty May relies a little too much on Danny Wolf as a ball handler. I like this team much more when Trey Donaldson is bringing the ball up and then you get action to Danny Wolf off of ball screens from Vlad Golden. And then I really like when they were running a ball screen off of Danny Wolf into a pick and pop and then another ball screen to Vlad Golden off of that as well. I think that creates so much confusion for the defense. But then you have Danny Wolf come up with the ball and just go straight into a ball screen with Vlad Golden, and you saw Oklahoma kind of take advantage of that a number of times because you saw him hedge Danny Wolf, and I don't think Danny Wolf does very well with the hedge, especially when the five man of the opposing team is a little bit more athletic, like what's his name was for Oklahoma, Godwin or something like that. He was actually a pretty good player too. I was impressed by him. But anyway, I felt like that was kind of a weakness there for him, and I feel like you have to get Trey Donaldson involved in that pick and roll game if you want it to be successful, because Danny Wolf, unfortunately, is just too turnover prone, and for whatever reason, I mean, I don't have stats to back this up, and I don't even know if there are stats to back this up, but I feel like Michigan players are off the ball, getting open for shots better when Trey Donaldson is in pick and roll rather than when Danny Wolf is in pick and roll. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and just, you know, if you want to look someplace for stats that could or could not back that up, check out CBB Analytics. I'm just saying, good place for stats. But yeah, no, this, I mean, you kind of fed into my last take on this game, which was it felt like a kind of a second round game. You know, felt like a, you know, 6-3, 7-2 type of matchup that, you know, like you said, you have a player like Danny Wolf that maybe is not quite, you know, ready enough to control the game in these big games and get their team over the hump to win them. And when you have that as your best player, it does kind of also limit you. So, yeah, no, I think that's very fair. I think that, you know, again, you know, not having a set point or a set guy that you're the guy that creates the action and gets the right guys in the right position, you know, when you want to be the guy taking the shot, it's hard, you know, unless you're a seasoned veteran, to be the guy bringing the ball up and also try to set yourself up for a shot and set other guys up in the right position as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something they have to get figured out. For whatever reason, I'm totally with you. They're just not finding their shot when Danny Wolf has the ball for whatever reason. Frank, Stat Tank Frank, he has his thoughts. He says, early in the season, teams were confused on guarding the big ball screens. More aggressive ball screen coverage has shown to be problematic for Michigan in those actions. Yeah, I mean, example A of that was Wisconsin, right? Like Wisconsin, they just kind of sat back on their heels and they didn't know what to do with it. And now you see a team like Oklahoma attacking the ball screen with, again, Godwin, Goodwin, whatever his last name is. I apologize. And I think they're going to have to figure that out. And unfortunately, the other piece of this is you don't have good enough shooting on this Michigan team. You definitely didn't have it in that game, and you definitely don't have it. Like, one of the reasons why you run a ball screen or you run ball screen action with a 4 and a 5 is because you have shooters all around him. Roddy Gale's not a shooter. Trey Johnson, pretty good shooter. He didn't shoot great last game, but, I mean, in his career, he's been, a plus 40% free throw shooter, or at least plus 35. And then Namari Burnett, he's fine, but he's not really a catch-and-shoot shooter for you either. So, like, I mean, you're going to have to get somebody out there to shoot better to help this pick-and-roll action, but... let's get a couple more takes and then we'll move on to Washington State. Problem with Michigan is they turn the ball over way too much in general, but they're also streaky from three. Yeah, no, I totally agree, John. And I think Daniel Wolf is a big problem for that. And Roddy Gale. Roddy Gale turns the ball over a lot too. Philip says Michigan loses first round of the tournament to a mid-major that presses them, will cause a lot of problems, especially Wolf. Yeah, I mean, I think if they get the right matchup, I think they can get through the first round. But I would not be surprised if, I don't know, what seed would you project Michigan as? Like a 5-7 somewhere in there? Or am I being too generous?
You might be a little bit on the generous side there. I would say like a more of like a 7-10. So like if they get a 10 seed with a good matchup against a 7 seed, they could definitely be a second week or a second round team. And then, you know, comes down to what their second round matchup is.
I see some people calling them a bubble team. I just don't think they're going to be a bubble team with this schedule. Like, they won enough games. They beat Xavier. They beat a couple other, I mean, not great teams, but, and then they've challenged themselves with Arkansas and Oklahoma in this one. Like, I don't know. Like, unless they just really bottom out in the Big Ten, I can't see them being a bubble team.
Well, I mean, the problem is they are only 1-2 in quad one games so far this season, and they do have one of the, you know, lower end losses as far as Big Ten teams go. So, you know, that plays little more factor.
Who was that, Wake Forest?
Yes, I believe so, yeah.
I think it was Wake Forest, yeah. I always forget about the Wake Forest loss. I think that was their first Power 4 team they played, too. So, all right. Okay, Russ, I have a thought on Washington, and I know nobody really cares for it, but I still have a thought on it, so I want to share it. So, if you did you watch the Washington State game?
I didn't. I just checked out some highlights.
Okay. But, So I watched it. I was up late and just obviously, you know, Washington plays late. So I watched this and also Apple Cup and everything. So I wanted to check it out and see what was going on. They benched Zoom Diallo in the starting lineup in this one and put in a senior named DJ Davis. I mean, I've watched DJ Davis a couple times this season, but I never really thought anything super great with him. Not trying to insult the kid or anything. I just didn't think there was anything, you know, super spectacular about him. But Danny Sprinkle puts him in instead. And great Osabor, like, their offense stalls out at the beginning. It just does not go well at all. And so at first I'm thinking to myself, what in the world is Danny Sprinkle doing? Like, this was a terrible decision. DJ Davis is not that good of a shooter. Like, he's chucking up threes from like 3-4 feet behind the 3-point line because he doesn't do a good enough job getting open off the ball. And then, I mean, there were literally times when they had four guys guarding Grace Osabor in the paint in this game, and it's like, the dude has to be incredibly frustrated right now because he can't do anything with the ball and all of his guys are just standing around out there. But then when it came to the end of the first half and into the second half, they started to get a whole lot more offense, and that's when they started to pull away in this game. And what I found out was Danny Sprinkle didn't do this to help Great Osabor as much in the starting lineup as he did just tell Zoom Diallo, hey, when I don't have my starting lineup out there, you're the offense. Get out there and just go play, like, get to the rim, do whatever you do that's so special. And so basically Danny Sprinkle is now saying, instead of putting two guys that are really good offensively out there together that don't really work well together in Diallo and in Osabor, I'm just going to split them up, and neither of them are going to really play together at the same time. So I'm going to have Osabor out there, and he's going to be the heavy with all these other guys who hopefully can shoot and hit threes. And then I'm going to put a bunch of defenders out there with Zoom Diallo, and then Zoom Diallo is going to slash and score and go crazy for him. And honestly, I really like it. And if they keep doing it, I think this is a Washington team that could upset maybe a team or two in the Big Ten this year, especially if they get him at home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I watched this, it was probably the most, you know, Washington tape I've watched all season. And, you know, I kept thinking about you know, Kent just being so down on him, like, no, Washington's the worst team in the Big Ten. And I didn't see that in this game. I didn't see that. I mean, obviously when you watch highlights, they're not going to show the slow stretch at the beginning of the game. So I did miss that, right. But you know, I was decently impressed with this Washington team. I think they can hang in there. I think they can make the Big Ten tournament. And I think, like you said, I think they could be one of those teams that in this new expanded Big Ten is maybe a type of like a Nebraska or Northwestern, you know, take back 4 or 5 years ago where, you know, they might be at best a bubble team, but they're going to knock off a Purdue or an Illinois or, you know, a Michigan State, one of the top teams in the conference. So, you know, I was impressed. You know, I think Greg Ospor is, you know, the thing is, the catch is with some of these Pac-12 additions, they haven't really officially joined the Big Ten, right? Like all their early games mm-hmm. were against each other. So they haven't yet traveled to the Big Ten country to actually experience the rigors of the Big Ten schedule yet. But as far as what I saw, I don't think this is clearly the worst team in the Big Ten at all.
KenPom has them winning one game in the Big Ten. It's a home game.
Thanks for that follow-up, JR. Thanks.
Yeah, it's a home game. I said
KenPom has them winning one game.
I mean, I was with you, so I'm not like I'm right there as well. But and KenPom's not always right. But like, you tell me who you think they win against in these home games: Indiana, Rutgers, Northwestern, clearly. Nebraska, Purdue, UCLA, Illinois, Maryland. Who do you think that one win is against?
Oh, who do I think KenPom has them beating?
Yeah, they have them beating them by 2 points at home. It's their only win they have them having in the Big Ten this year.
I'm going to go with Rutgers.
You're correct. They have them beating them by 2 points.
And I was going to say that first half, the first four teams you listed there are probably the better chances, you know, as far as Indiana, Northwestern, Nebraska and North, or we said Indiana, Northwestern, Nebraska, Rutgers.
India,
yeah. Those four, that back four is kind of probably the top half of the conference teams. But, you know, I think that you'll still see this year, and people are reminded of it somewhat, that it's tough to win on the road in the Big Ten, period.
Right. And I think it's going to be tough going out to, you know, like UCLA and Oregon and Washington and all those different places and trying to win there as well. I mean, they also get like Oregon at home and they get UCLA. I think I listed them at home as well, but I figured those are teams that are already out there. So like the travel doesn't matter as much, but we saw the travel did matter, I feel like, in football. So if it mattered for football, I feel like, you know, we'll see it matter in basketball as well. But yeah, so those teams, Indiana, Northwestern and Nebraska, they have them losing to all of them by one at home.
Oh, wow.
So
I will say it's a little bit different than football, I think, because, you know, every Big Ten, traditional Big Ten team has either Washington, Oregon as road games or USC, UCLA as road games, and they're on the same week/weekend. So it's not going to be like fly out there one day, play a game, fly back that night. Like they'll be able to plan out a 4 or 5, 6 day stay out west for those two games. So it'd be hopefully a little bit easier on the legs, a little bit easier on, you know, adapting to that travel out there.
Yeah, no, for sure. That makes sense. John says, Greg Ospor was their big portal acquisition. I think he came with Sprinkle from Utah State, if I'm not.
Yep, yeah, Utah State Aggies, yep.
And he's been average to bad. I mean, I'm not going to say he's been bad, but he just has no help. Like I said, they are literally putting 2-3 guys on him down in the box or in the paint, and he's trying to pass out of it, but his guys, they aren't moving. They aren't helping him in a lot of cases. He's a good rebounder, I feel like, and he's really bodying guys down there, but he's going to learn in the Big Ten that he's not going to be the biggest body. I think that was something that helped him at Utah, was he was just the biggest body and could kind of, you know, I'm not going to say just big. I'm not going to say just tall, Russ, okay? I'm not going to say either of those. But I mean, he's definitely still got skill to him as well, but he's gonna have to learn to adjust in the Big Ten when there's guys that are just as big as him and can rebound just as well. So
yeah, a little bit of the Ace Baldwin experience, right? Like taking that step up and realizing, okay, you know, like you're still gonna be a good player on this level, but you're gonna need to find new ways to find help and get open.
Yeah. And he has this year, man. He's been good this year. So, sometimes it just takes a year, you know? So, all right. Let's see. Any thoughts on Michigan State, Maryland, Ohio State, UCLA, USC? Amici Johnson's away from Ohio State. I feel bad saying it, but that might be kind of a good thing for Ohio State with the way he's been playing lately. I don't know if whatever personal issues he's having has been impacting his play. I really hope not. Hope everything works out okay for him. But, I mean, Maryland absolutely destroys St. Francis. Michigan State takes care of business against Oakland. Any thoughts in these five teams that we saw play nobody schools?
Yeah, no, careful who you call Nobody Tech, by the way, because what was it? Gottlieb, they called a school Nobody Tech, and then they lost to him. But you're just not going to learn a whole lot. And I think even some of these out West teams, we don't know a whole lot yet. You know, these Oregon UCLAs, because they haven't played any actual traditional Big Ten teams. So it's, yeah, they kind of did what was expected of them, and we'll see what happens here next couple weeks when we really get into the meat of the season.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I think I had UCLA first in my power rankings this last week, and that was more than anything just based off a resume. I feel like they beat good teams that deserve it. So when you beat good teams, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt there. But I'm still skeptical on what we'll see from Oregon and UCLA when they start playing some of these bigger teams in the Big Ten as well, especially with the travel and everything that goes on there. I do think that's kind of a deficiency for Oregon and UCLA with how much they're going to be traveling and how that's going to be hard on them. But overall, this is probably going to be one of my favorite storylines of the season to watch, is just how good UCLA and Oregon has looked out of conference, and how they're going to look once they get in the conference this year as well.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Let's see. Russ, let's go ahead. We'll hit a CB analytics ad, and then we'll come back and we'll preview some of the games. I think there's a whole lot more meat in the previews than there are in the recaps here. So everybody, we'll be right back. And after we watch this ad from CBB Analytics. CBB Analytics isn't just another stat site. It's your ultimate destination for in-depth college basketball analysis used by fans and even the coaches. It has comprehensive stats for men's and women's basketball across Division 1 through 3, dating all the way back to 2018. From shooting percentage to game recap, CBB Analytics has it all. Try CBB Analytics for free or pay for a tier to take your basketball knowledge to the next level. Use code HUDDLE. Just got that from CBB Analytics. Use code HUDDLE if you sign up for CBB Analytics, and you can get $30 off your first purchase of, I think it's anywhere from 3 months to a year. So if you purchase 3 months to a year, use code HUDDLE and you will get $30 off. That would be awesome if you would do that. All right, Russ, we have some big games being played. Some of these I feel like are for sure losses for Big Ten teams, and then others of these I feel like are for sure wins, and then other ones are a little bit tighter, a little bit closer, and I think have some good discussion points here. Let's start off with them. We'll get your thoughts. I really don't want to talk about them too much because they just anger me more than anything, but Kentucky, Ohio State, listen, Ohio State under Chris Holtmann would upset some of these higher-ranked teams from time to time, and to Jake Diebler's credit, they did almost upset Pitt earlier in the year. However, I don't think Pitt was super highly ranked in that game. I think they were just higher in KenPom. I think they were like top 10 in KenPom in that game. But anyway, Ohio State almost upsets Pitt. I don't think it's happening here. Apparently, there's a lot going on with this Ohio State team right now. Like I said, Michi Johnson not there. We have no idea when Aaron Bradshaw's coming back. Apparently, he's practicing again, so maybe he comes back for this game. But, I mean, do you hold out any hope for Ohio State in this one, Russ? What's your thoughts?
I mean, I hold out some hope. I mean, it's still any given Saturday, any given day in college basketball, you get a guy hot or you get a guy hurt, which we'll talk about that with Auburn. You get a guy hurt in the first 2 minutes of the game, you know, that's a key part of UK's offense, then yeah, they definitely got a shot. But I mean, what a weekend we've got coming up, right? Like, I mean, it's crazy to think, if you told somebody like 5-6 years ago that we're going to have a weekend like this, where there is a ton of big basketball matchups and a ton of college football playoffs and an expanded college football playoff, and all the college football playoff games are going to be on campus and all these top basketball games are going to be at neutral sites. Like, it's kind of crazy. Like, I went through looking at these games and it's like all but, and I'm not sure about Syracuse, Maryland, but every other one is played at a neutral site.
I'm pretty sure Syracuse, Maryland is at, it's the Nutrafol Gotham Classic. So I think it's at a neutral site.
Wow. But so every one of these games is at a neutral site. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's crazy. So,
but the Purdue and Auburn one is still in Birmingham. I hate that they get away with that. Like, oh, this is a neutral site game. Okay.
Still in the state of Alabama. It's similar to what we just did in Indianapolis against A&M, right? Like, it's technically a neutral site game, but it's down the road. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which it was interesting hearing, Auburn talk about that Broom will travel with the team to Birmingham. And I'm like, oh, he'll take the 30-minute trip down the road. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch out. Maryland, Syracuse is in the Barclays Center in New York. So,
okay. There you go.
Yeah. So closer for Syracuse, but still a neutral site game. Yeah. I think we'll get to that for sure when we get to Auburn Purdue. I think that's going to be a huge part of trying to predict that game, if Johnny Broom is going to play or Jani Broom is going to play or not. I think Ohio State's only hope here against Kentucky is that they just shoot the lights out. I mean, that's kind of what I was saying about this Ohio State team from the beginning, which is they really don't have all that great of rim protection. Devin Royal can do some really good things for you down in the paint. He's been kind of a star for this team ever since Bradshaw went down, and they can go small and really impact teams in this one. I do think it affects them that Kentucky doesn't have like an outright star player anymore this season. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. What was it? Butler. I think he had a really good game this last game they played.
He had a great game against Louisville. I got to see that one.
Yeah. He had like 30 points or something like that. Like,
yeah. Went off.
He was like 10 for 10. Like, he didn't even shoot that much. He just was really efficient in everything he was doing. So, I mean, obviously, if they get efficiency like that from their guys, you don't need a star player to win these games. But if Ohio State, if they can get Junie Mobley Jr. going and they can get Bruce Thornton shooting well, if Micah Parrish can have another one of his 4-for-4 three-point shooting games, Ohio State definitely has a chance to win this one. But, I mean, I just think that's what this Ohio State team is this season. If they aren't hitting their threes and they aren't able to take their threes, i.e. against Auburn, then you're going to lose by 30 points. But if you're going to be able to shoot 40%+ and be one of the best shooting teams in the nation, you're going to have a chance to win. Problem is, you're not going to shoot 40% every single game. It's really, really hard to do that, especially when teams know that's basically all you can do, and they just sell out on that. Now, Devin Royal helps with that, but Devin Royal is only 6'6". Like, he's not like a dominant down low, 7'4 guy. Oh, gosh, I wish we had that.
Nobody ever has that? Not everybody has one of the guys? No.
Okay. Everybody has those, just growing on trees on their bench. So,
interesting.
but
big if true.
Yeah, big if true. But, yeah, so I think that's all I got there. UCLA, North Carolina. Russ, any thoughts on this one? North Carolina's kind of been losing a little bit, but they've been playing tough teams. UCLA's been winning their big games against some tougher teams, so I lean UCLA in this one. But RJ Davis is still really good for North Carolina. I still think this is a pretty good North Carolina team, so we should see them with some good fight. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, my initial thought was I'm surprised it's a three-point spread is the prediction here. Like, I would probably put money on UCLA covering for sure. I think UCLA is one of those teams that spreads it out. Obviously Bill Dow's probably been their key guy. Like, when you watch highlights, you watch them hit big shots, he seems to always be the name that's involved with big plays. It kind of helps him on runs and helps him those close games. But I'd be kind of shocked if UCLA lost this one.
Yeah, me too. Like, Kent and I were talking about on the Power Rankings show, they're kind of like Kentucky. They don't have like a star player, but all of their players just kind of do what they're asked to do well. And when all of them do it well, it kind of fits. So,
North Carolina they've played a tough non-conference schedule, so they are seasoned, but every top team they've played, they've lost to. Their best win is maybe like a Dayton, or Georgia Tech maybe, but they've lost to, Auburn, Alabama, Michigan State, Florida, Kansas. Like, every top team they've played, they've come up short. So
basically every SEC team they've played, in Michigan State.
right.
But nothing new. Everybody's losing the SEC this year. Even I have to admit the SEC is the best basketball conference.
Thanks to Michigan and those recent losses, to Oklahoma and Arkansas. Like, there was actually a point when they were talking about post SEC ACC challenge, and they were like, oh, the SEC is clearly the most dominant conference, but if you looked at their matchups with the Big Ten, the Big Ten actually had the lead on them, but thanks to teams like Michigan, that's not the case anymore. But yeah, even Purdue's got, I think they have four SEC teams on the schedule. Auburn is their fourth of four, so yeah. Hopefully we can go 3-1 this weekend. But yeah,
that'd be nice. 3-1. Who? Ohio State, Purdue, Illinois. Which one am I missing?
No. I'm sorry. Purdue going, like, Purdue, because we beat Ole Miss and Alabama.
Oh.
And then, Yeah. Oh, sorry. Gotcha. My fault.
I thought you meant Big Ten.
I always got to bring it back to Purdue. I'm sorry.
No, yeah. It's okay. Well, let's go to Purdue. That's what we have next. All right. So Purdue, Auburn, KenPom is not super faithful for or hopeful for Purdue in this one. They have Auburn winning 83-72. I think that's too big. I know it's a neutral site game for Purdue, and obviously Purdue's going to play their best at Mackey, but I still think Purdue is a team that can travel. I still think Purdue is a team that if you get them rocking and you get them rolling, this is still one of the teams that is hardest to beat in the country if everybody's playing well and everybody's doing what they're supposed to do, especially if you can get some production from CJ Cox, or Miles Colvin, Cam Heidi, those kind of guys. If you can get some production from them, Purdue's a really, really hard team to beat. Now, unfortunately, that didn't go so well for him against Texas A&M, but if I know anything about Matt Painter, I know that you don't let a loss last week lose you the game next week as well. So he's going to have these guys right for this one. What's your thoughts, Russ?
Yeah, when we talked about it a little bit earlier, the big storyline here is Jahni Broome, whether he's going to play or not. You know, huge factor. He's the, you know, probably the best player in the country, probably, you know, the odds-on favorite right now to win the player of the year. But
he is the best player in the country, and that's the only reason why I can feel any goodness about what happened against Ohio State. It's like, he's the best player in the country. There's nothing you can do.
There you go. Yeah, they – I mean, you talk about responding to losses. Like, their last three games are just beatdowns, straight beatdowns. But we kind of looked into it over on Boiler Express towards the end of our podcast. We happened to look up some of the stats from Georgia State and Auburn, and we saw that – Broome only played 2 minutes and had 2 points, and it was like, oh, separated shoulder. And then they come out saying, you know, that it's not going to have an operation on it. It's only a short-term issue. He, like I said, he's traveling with the team to Birmingham, but there's no word on whether he's playing yet or not. But, you know, the big thing that bit Purdue against A&M was you can't go 7 minutes without scoring. You know, and that's what I think the biggest void without Zach Edey is not having the guy that you can say, okay, it's been a couple minutes, feed the big guy, let's get a bucket. And, you know, we need to maybe do a better job of just making sure, like, we go to one of those high percentage plays, you know, maybe a ball screen action with Braden Smith or something where we get a high percentage shot, high percentage look to at least get the drought ended. Because we also held A&M like 4+ minutes without a bucket. And that was our chance to kind of make a run and win that game. And if we hit just a couple shots in that run, we probably still survive that game. So I think that's our biggest weakness. And against a team like Auburn that's one of, if not the best offensive teams as a whole in the country as well, second to maybe like a Tennessee, you know, I can see why it's a double-digit difference. You know, if you get some inside information and you find out Broome's not going to play, go ahead and hit Purdue to cover before they adjust the line. But, you know, it is down. It's basically a home game for Auburn. And so it doesn't surprise me that it's that big. But like you said, if we can get things rolling, we can stay in a rhythm, we can definitely play with anybody in the country.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you have one of the best point guards in the country, if not the best. You have one of the best top three players in the country in Trey Kaufman-Wren and Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer. I mean, my biggest thing with this Purdue team, and I said in the last episode, and I'm sure you'll have thoughts on it as well, Russ, but unfortunately right now you just have Trey Kaufman-Wren playing out of position, right? I mean, he's playing the five right now. He's much more of a four. Listen, I'll eat my words. I said a year ago that I didn't think Trey Kaufman-Wren was all that good. He's fantastic, especially when he has that right hand. He can just eat about anybody's lunch offensively, but defensively, she's just not fit to play the five defensively, unfortunately. And when you get Will Berg in there, and you can, I mean, we were talking about this a little bit before the show, like if you get Will Berg in there, Will Berg can give you good solid minutes where he's not fouling, you know, getting two or three fouls in 10 minutes of play. That's kind of like the missing piece for this Purdue team if they can get Will Berg to play well. But unfortunately, this is the first time where he's really seen 10-plus minutes or wanting to see 10-plus minutes because Daniel Jacobson went down, which is unfortunate. You know, I really wanted to see what Daniel Jacobson would have been this season. But, you know, that's the game. Injuries happen. You got to do what you got to do. So we'll see what happens here. But, I mean, if there's anybody that can get Will Berg right, I think it's Matt Painter. It's just like it is a pretty uphill project to get done. I mean, am I right on that? Do you see any other way to get the five position right without Will Berg? What's your thoughts here, Russ?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, one thing we said before we came on, one thing you got to remember is this is, like you said, the first year that Will Berg has played any kind of significant minutes, but he's still struggling to get, you know, 8, 9, 10 minutes a game because he, you know, he did get injured his first year in redshirt, and then last year as a freshman didn't play hardly at all. And so it's hard to get into that when we've had a pretty tough non-conference schedule, and now we're already headed in the Big Ten schedule here in a couple of games. But objectively, you know, you just shot out at CBB analytics. Like, objectively, we're a much better team on both ends with Wilberg out there. It's just, can we trust him out there to not foul? Can we trust him out there to not, you know, give up a high percentage of offensive rebounds to the team? But yeah, you know, I think Trakoff and Wren is, like I said, he's elite offensively, but defensively, one thing that did help Edie, you know, his size did help, right? He wasn't just big. I know that was the whole debate, but like, when you're 7'4" and not trying to foul and just walling up, it's a little bit different than 6'10" and walling up and trying not to foul. You know, it's just, it's a difference. And, you know, when there's that much more weight as far as our front court goes on Trakoff and Wren, he's really got to stay out of foul trouble. And so it takes a lot of the legs out from under him on the defensive end to play more aggressively and, you know, get some more blocks, get some more denials. But yeah, I mean, you know, Braden Smith and Trakoff and Wren, when they get in that ball screen action, it can be just as lethal as Edie if they do it right.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I totally agree with you. Philip point out here, Smith has more blocks this season than TKR. Yeah, I mean, hey, give credit to Smith, though, right? He's doing what he can. He's added to the charge.
He is. He's fiery, man. And it's also a thing. We've kind of coined the phrase on Weather Express that post-loss Braden is a thing. And we're getting post-loss Braden this weekend. And, you know, he could absolutely go off against these guys.
That's my other thing with this Purdue team, right? Is like, I think Braden is being asked to do so much. Oh, there goes Russ. Maybe he didn't like that I was going to bring up Braden Smith. That's my other thing with Purdue. There's Russ. That was my other thing with Purdue so far this season, right? Is like, Braden Smith, it is the magic that kind of makes everything work for Purdue this season, correct? Like, I mean,
yeah. And how Darius can't, I'm so sorry that we have to have Braden Smith play well to win big games. Who would have thought our best player has to play well?
My only thing with that is like, he is being asked to do something that, I mean, he obviously is capable of doing. We saw him in the Maryland game, right? Like, he had a huge game and he was able to hit shots late in that game. But like, is that something Braden Smith can do all season long? And I'm not denying that he can't do it. I'm genuinely asking, like, is that something that he can do for you all season long? We know he's a facilitator. We know he's a really good passer. We know he's one of those guys, you get him in the pick and roll game, and he is just deadly with passing the ball and being able to facilitate it to the right player at the right time, on target passes, all of that stuff. But can he be that guy that just comes down the court, shoots up a shot really fast, hits a three, goes back down, and, you know, does this little thing when he points to himself? Like, I mean, we saw that against Texas A&M when Wade Taylor was doing that. He responded, and he hit one right back on Wade Taylor. So it's not like he can't do it, but that's my thing is, like, can he do it all season long? We can see him do it in games. We can see him do it for stretches, but, like, can he do it all season long? I'm not denying that he can't, but that's just so much pressure to put on one guy's shoulders, you know? Like, he's great, but it's a lot to put on one guy.
If there's anybody that can do it, it's him. I mean, for sure. Like, he, you know, obviously freshman year is a little bit different, you know, coming in as a true freshman and starting right off the bat and getting through a whole 30 game plus slate. You know, obviously kind of bore some bad fruit there at the end against FDU, but you know, as an upperclassman now, as a leader, as, you know, the preseason Big Ten player of the year, but still hearing things like, well, but he's just not as athletic as insert other Big Ten point guard here. You know, he's still got guys like an Ace Baldwin going, oh, who's the point guard for Purdue? Is he supposed to be pretty good? You know, like, he's very much got a chip on his shoulder and he's ready to prove everybody wrong. I mean, he's outplayed Mark Sears from Alabama 2 years in a row now, but yet Mark Sears is preseason All-American point guard and not Braden Smith. So I think 100% he is ready to go every game this year, leave it on the line. And he knows that, you know, not only can he do it, but he doesn't necessarily have to do it. You know, he's got somebody like a Fletcher Lurie that can go off for 20 plus. Obviously, Trigoff and Ren's leading in scoring. Miles Colvin and Cam Heidi, or should I say Slam Heidi, is, you know, they've stepped up their roles as scorers and part of this offense. So, and then, like I said, CJ Cox, Jakari Harris, they provide X factors as far as scoring off the bench. So, you know, I think he's ready to carry the load and do as much as this team needs to win, but he does know he still has to get other people involved.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that bench is a huge piece of it as well. The bench has to be able to come in. If a guy like Fletcher Lawyer or Trey Kaufman Wren is not having their night and they're not going off for 20-plus, like that last game, I think, what, Fletcher had 10, 12 points or something like that? He had a couple threes in that one, but he had a couple. No, did he hit any threes in that Texas A&M game?
I'm not sure if he did. I know as a team we were 2-for-11 on wide-open threes against Texas A&M. You know, so that's another of those things I see Philip talking about shutting down our offense. I, I kind of disagree. Look, we just missed open shots, and then A&M was just hitting off balance shot, off balance three here and there. And, you know, that Ace Baldwin thing, Philip, like, to me, that's Brayden Smith is this year's Zach Edey, right? Like, Zach Edey last year used to have guys all the time going, oh, Zach Edey hasn't had to deal with a player like me. Oh, I'm just so, like, Omar Ballou, for example. And then you go to that game, and what do they do to Edey? They double team and triple team him. And that's what Penn State did. You know, Ace Baldwin tried to act like, I'm going to shut him down. And then he was getting, you know, help left and right to double team, triple team to get that ball out of Braden's hand as quick as you could. And it's like, oh, I thought you was going to lock him down, Ace. Like, oh, you need help. And then you're going to act like you know, oh, I shut down the best point guard in the Big Ten. Like, okay, buddy.
I love a psycho on defense though. So I can't deny if a guy locks down on defense and he wants to go psycho about it and go crazy. I can't get mad at it. So.
Oh, I agree.
Whether it's double team or not, I can't get mad at a psycho. and Phillip points out too, like TKR, he was shut down, which did hurt the Purdue offense. And you're right, like without Trey Coffin-Wren, they definitely didn't have the points in the paint that they are used to getting from him. But I think you're right too, Russ. When that happens, you have to hit your open shots because the open shots were there. But if you're not going to hit your open shots, then that's what happens, right? You only score 66 points in the game. So whoever's taking those open shots, whether it's Miles Colvin, whether it's Fletcher Lawyer, whether it's Brayden Smith. Brayden Smith had a ton of threes in that game. He was, what, 5-for-10 or something like that? Like, he was nearly 50%, if not 50% in that one. So he was hitting shots. But, of course, it's the other guys off the bench and Fletcher Lawyer that has to be able to hit those shots too. So we'll see. We'll see what happens, but yeah, I think it just, whatever you do defensively to this Purdue team, there is going to be a counter, whether that counter is Trey Coffin-Wren, whether that counter is Fletcher Lawyer, whether that counter is Brayden Smith, guys off the bench, there's going to be a counter. It's just, can those guys step up and be that counter for you in that moment? The obvious thing that you took away against Purdue last year was Zach Edey. You had to try and take that away. Not everybody could do it, but when you did it, there had to be a counter. And those times were fewer, obviously, last year because Zach Edey was so unstoppable. But there are going to be things that teams are able to take away this year from Purdue, and Matt Painter's just going to have to get these guys to actually go out there and counter it against it. Now, if there's any coach that can do it, I think it's Matt Painter. Matt Painter's one of the best coaches in the country, but we'll just have to see as the season progresses and as things goes on. So any more thoughts on this Auburn game, Russ?
No, I'm looking forward to it. A little mid-afternoon basketball while watching these playoff games this weekend.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. Yeah. I think Purdue wins if Chennai Broome doesn't play.
I mean, I definitely think it's more like a one or two possession game, not an 11-point spread for sure.
Yeah,
but you know, Auburn, they're still very talented even without Broome on the floor. We still got to bring our A game.
Pettiford's still good. Number of other guys on that team that's really good too. So we'll see. See. All right. Maryland, Syracuse. That's another 11-point spread there, according to Ken Pom. Maryland is so good this season. Derek Queen, those guards are really athletic. They seem like if one of them's not doing well one night, the other one's going to do well. I mean, it looks like Kevin Willard has a really good team put together here. I don't know if I'm really ready to make him a Big Ten contender yet, but I mean, they certainly can get there. You got a lottery draft pick in Derek Queen. You can make a lot of things happen, especially Julian Reese, who's down there. He's not necessarily a great NBA player looking to the future, but he's definitely a good college player. What's your thoughts on Maryland versus Syracuse, Russ?
Yeah, the net absolutely loves Maryland, right? Like, they're the top-ranked team in the Big Ten as far as net goes. Yeah. So, you know, they definitely have talent. They're definitely, you know, taking care of business against some lower-ranked opponents. The problem is they're 0-2 against quad one teams. Yeah. So, you know, how's it going to happen when they actually have to face, you know, top level opponents? But you know, this is definitely a game that they should take care of. If they're going to be a team that kind of bounces back a little bit from last year's disappointment, they're going to have to take care of a game like this and go into Big Ten play with a little bit of momentum.
Who's the other quad one game? It's Marquette, and who's the other one they played?
Oh, you're asking me. I'm not Frank, man.
Frank would know.
Purdue was a quad one game.
Oh, Purdue. Okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Of course.
I've come on now. I should know that one.
I keep forgetting they played Purdue. I don't know why. That was such a good game. But
yeah, it's another one of those games that Purdue wins that everybody forgets about. But yeah.
Purdue has just played a lot of really, really good games so far this season. Alabama, Texas A&M, Maryland, a lot of a lot of really good challenging games for him, which will help him out, obviously, come Big Ten play. All right, Iowa, Utah, Russ. Iowa favored by 2, according to KenPom, in this one. This Iowa team is interesting. I still don't know exactly what to make of them. I still like the pieces that they have, but Fran seems to be trying to put them together a little bit in some couple different ways. They still haven't found rebounding. Owen Freeman, he's doing a lot of things for the team, but he can't seem to rebound. I don't know why. He's big enough. He's strong enough. He should be able to just kind of beat guys up down there and get the rebound, but he doesn't really do it. What's your thoughts, Iowa versus Utah here?
Yeah, Owen Freeman was one of my, you know, favorite players from last season, not wearing a Purdue jersey. But he, for some reason, he's having a little bit of sophomore slump as far as hanging on to those boards. But, you know, yeah, it's, you know, Fran's one of those teams that's going to have an Iowa team that, you know, scores the basketball well, is competitive, you know, is has those streaks where they look like they could be a contender in the Big Ten, but then also loses a game that they have no business losing. So, you know, it is pretty much, again, another one of those fake neutral site games where it's up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where they're going to have, you know, heavy home support. Yeah, I mean, he's somehow he figures it out. It's that championship defense, you know, it's that tape, you know, that he put out the how to build a championship defense that apparently they actually try to play defense at Iowa sometimes. And, you know, hopefully they get enough to win this Saturday against Utah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Philip. They got to get in there and rebound it, which is interesting because Owen Freeman does get offensive rebounds. He's averaging 2.1 offensive rebounds per game, but then when you look at his defensive rebounds, only 4.4. Like, it's for whatever reason, it's those defensive rebounds he can't snatch up as well as other guys do. Josh Dix is getting in there and rebounding as well, which I think is big for him when he's able to do that. Last year, he was pretty much just a score guy. I mean, he really didn't do much else other than that. And he's still scoring well this year. He's averaging over 13 points per game, but he's got to be more than that this year. He's got to get more assists. He's got to get more rebounds in this one, averaging nearly 3 assists per game. So that's good from him. But I think Drew Thelwell has been a nice addition to them from Morehead State. I think Brock Harding has done some good things for him as well. So that point guard position, once they really get that squared away, once they get the rebounding squared away, I think this could be a dangerous team in Iowa that could give some teams some fits. Obviously, not as much on the defensive end, but offensively, they could give some teams some fits.
So. Championship defense, JR. Championship. They play championship defense.
That's right. How dare I? How dare I say they don't?
Yeah, I'm surprised there's not more kind of anomalies with that as far as being good at offensive rebounding, but not great defensively. Because really, rebounding, the onus is all on the defense, right? Like offensively, if you're gonna go after offensive rebounds, it's just go at it like a madman and get the ball. And defense, it's all about you got to find your guy. Everybody's got to match up well. Everybody's got to box out. And then somebody's got to secure that rebound defensively. So, you know, it kind of shocks me we don't see more kind of cases like that.
Yeah, I've always said rebound, not always. I've always thought that rebounding in basketball is kind of like offensive line play in football, where like you can have all the intangibles and you can have like the weight and the size and everything, but if you're not just like an absolute menace that will just like throw somebody on the ground to go get a ball, you're not going to be a very good rebounder. It's guys that are just like willing to completely destroy the person in front of them so that way they can get the ball. Obviously, can't do over the back, but you know, just go get the ball. Those are the guys that are the best at it. So,
yeah, and similar to offensive line, if one guy doesn't do his job and one guy breaks that line, you're giving up the rebound, right? You're giving up the sack. So
exactly. Phillip's right. This is the second Utah team that Iowa has played this year, and Iowa's only loss was to a Utah team this year, or not the only loss. Their only out of conference loss, I believe, because they beat everybody else in their out of conference. No, Iowa State. I always forget about Iowa State. Never mind. But they did lose to Utah State by 7. I think it was 77-70 in that one. So we'll see. We'll see if Utah can beat them. It's going to be an interesting one. Chris says Ohio State is no way that close to Kentucky in that game. Yeah, we talked about it. Really, the only shot they have is if they shoot over 40%. But other teams know that, so they're not going to let Ohio State shoot over 40%. At least I would think they wouldn't, but you never know. But no, I don't disagree with you, Chris. I do not disagree with you at all. Oregon 79, Stanford 72. I'm going to be honest, Russ, not watched a whole lot of Stanford this season, so, you know, not really been my cup of tea. But Oregon, watched a lot of them this season. Nate Biddle, very good. Jackson Shellstad, when he decides to be, very good. I like what Dana Ullman's doing with this team. This is a good Oregon team. They they've beaten some good teams this season as well. What's your thoughts with Oregon and Stanford?
Yeah, you kind of summed up my brief notes a little bit there. Nate Biddle, very good. Very good. Leading scorer for Oregon.
Very savvy, too. He's a very savvy player.
Yeah, and I haven't watched a lot of Stanford or really any Stanford either, but I did see they have losses to Cal Poly and Grand Canyon. They're 86th in KenPom, and I don't think they have any business being within single digits of Oregon this weekend. I think this is, you know, it's funny. Some of these Pac-12, you know, crossovers to the Big Ten are playing a little bit of revenge tour, right? You got, obviously, Washington State is a rivalry, but you've got, you know, Oregon still playing these Stanfords and some of these, like Oregon State, they played earlier in the year. And, yeah, they're going to give them a nice little farewell, you know, one last little beat down this weekend. And I'd be surprised if it's within 15.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be. I feel like if I was a Purdue fan, I'd be a little insulted that the spread in the Auburn-Purdue game is bigger than the spread in the Oregon-Stanford game. It's like, you really think? Like,
yeah, that's true. I mean, it's the home team bump. It's the home team bump. I think they're, you know, again, it's a technically, it's in San Jose. It's not at Palo Alto. It's not actually technically a home game for Stanford, but it's still a home environment. So I think in college basketball, they heavily, heavily weight that. Yeah, I mean, I hope that puts another chip on the shoulder for the Boilermakers, yeah.
We'll get to Illinois here in a second, but, like, can we just say, like, this is my least favorite part about college basketball is how many of these neutral site games and stuff they do, like, for no reason. Like, what is the reason? Like, there's not a tournament classic or something they're doing for Oregon-Stanford, is there? Like,
I think it's just – it's tournament atmospheres. I think it's recruiting. I think it's just to kind of build out a big-ticket event over the holiday season. They know a lot of these are played during the college breaks anyway. So like a lot of the home crowds aren't really there. If they play it at their home crowds, there's, you know, like the paint crews, the student sections, I was searching for that, but the student sections are not there. So they figure, hey, instead of playing it at home where we're trying to just fill in an atmosphere without the students, let's play a big arena close to our fans that, you know, more people could maybe get into the game. We can sell it as a bigger ticket game. And just do that kind of thing. So I think that's kind of what these games are about.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I get it, but I don't know. I'm just such a homer for playing as many games on campus as you can possibly get. So,
yeah, I mean, but if nobody's on campus, you know.
That's true. That's true. There's nobody right now. So John says, thanks, JR, for not putting the Indiana prediction up there. They stink this year, an IU fan. I didn't think we probably had much to say on Indiana, Chattanooga.
I thought they were back this year. I thought they were going to be co-favorites to win the Big Ten. So maybe we're picking them to beat Purdue and win the Big Ten this year. I mean, what happened?
Listen, if you listen to last episode, I ate my crow when we talked about teams we believe in. Burke still believes in Indiana. I was like, Burke, I am not there, bro. he said it was his fandom, and he has to believe, otherwise he's depressed. So
never daunted, never daunted.
Well, his podcast is often daunted, so he's,
yeah,
he is the daunted. All right, let's see. I think Illinois, Missouri is our only one left to talk about here. So Illinois, they had that really good game against Tennessee, looked really good. If they could just inbound the ball there at the end of the game, or maybe stop a drive to the hoop late in the game by, I keep forgetting his name, Tony, Tracy, Barney, Phillip's going to put it in the chat for me. He did it last time, but yeah, I mean, if they could just stop a drive at the hoop at the end of the game, that would help him, but they weren't able to do that for him. So, and Kasperis Yakonis, and I learned how to say his name because he's that good at this point. Like, he's basically been dragging this Illinois team a little bit. When Ben Hummerkaus isn't able to hit threes, Gainey, there we go. Thank you, Sonny.
Oh, appreciate, man, everybody's it. Here. We got Sonny, we got Kent, Phillip. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I gotta just go off on Illinois right here. That.
But, I mean, Sonny knows my thoughts on Ben Hummerkaus. I mean, the dude has got to actually – thanks, Kent. Thank you, Kent. The dude has actually got to start hitting some shots in order to, you know, justify his playing time out there. He does get some rebounds, but not enough rebounds to justify his playing time. At this point, it's mostly a Vesic, you know, KJ.
Careful.
I know, right? KJ at this point as well. I mean, those guys are really, really good. But and Kylan Boswell, he steps up. He does some nice things. Trey White steps up and does some nice things. But, I mean, this game is going to take you as – or this team is going to be taken as far as KJ and Vesic take them this season. What do you think, Russ?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they got star players, they got talent, but can they get over the edge? I feel like Illinois is one of those teams in the last, you know, half a year to year that we give all them credit on these close losses to Purdue, or like, oh man, if they didn't play UConn, they're a Final Four team. And it's like, oh, they played the best team in the country and they almost beat them. And it's like, okay, well, almost beating them and beating them are two different things. But I mean, they definitely have the talent to compete, but you know, you've got to get over that hump. You've got to, you know, this is kind of, you know, and Purdue's facing it too, right? With the Braden Smith and Trakoff Wren heavy offense, you know, if those two guys are not on, you're going to show to win these big games. You know, Missouri is very much outmatched, I think, in this game, but they, you know, they took care of Kansas. Luckily for Illinois, it is a neutral site game. It's not on Missouri's campus. It's in St. Louis. So I would expect Illinois to pretty easily handle this game. But who knows, you know, what chip on their shoulder Missouri is going to try to have and maybe try to get some of that mojo from the Kansas game in there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think Kansas is a little bit overrated this season, you know, don't come at me, Hunter Dickinson, on your podcast, but gosh, I hate him. I cannot wait until he's out of college basketball. Did he like throw something at somebody the other day or something like that?
I don't know. He's like the new Perry Ellis, right? Like Kansas used to have Perry Ellis, who was, he played college basketball. He's like mid 30s. You know, Hunter Dickinson's on that track.
Yeah, he's about there. He's got to be done after the season. I'm pretty sure he's like 23, 24. He's got to be done after this season. Anyway, yeah, I mean, this Missouri team, like, they're good, don't get me wrong, and they are an SEC team, so, you know, there's always the possibility that they're going to beat a Big Ten team, right? Because Michigan's done it a couple times here, so an SEC team can do it, but I don't know. I like this Illinois team too much. I think Brad has a really good squad in front of him. I think they have too many star players. As long as they do what they're supposed to do in this one, I hope we get to see Merez Johnson out there with Avisic and KJ and try to see that whole situation. I've been begging for that. If we can finally get that, but you know, I've been texting Sonny about that. He says Brad's holding it. So whatever you got cooking up over there, Brad, I'm not gonna complain too much. But at the end of the day, like, this is a game. If Illinois loses, it's not gonna be because Minnesota. It's not gonna be because Missouri won the game. It's gonna be because Illinois did something out of character and, you know, fell apart in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think this is gonna be also, you know, Missouri's right at that line. They're, I think, 49th in KenPom right now. So they're right at that line to being a quad one win since this is a neutral site game. So, you know, I think it's one of those games that it could be more like a double-digit spread in Illinois' favorite, and then they're big-time Missouri fans hoping that they stay within that top 50 to add that resume win to Illinois' resume come March.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. It's going to be a resume win for whoever can get there. So, I mean, you tell me, Russ, like, I'm really impressed with Illinois' defense this season overall, being able to play much better than they were last year. Now, still not getting the steals and stuff like that, but last year, the defense, that was one of the things that was really holding them back. This year, KenPom has them better on defense than they have them on offense. So
I thought they were supposed to have, like, three guys on the all-defensive team last year, right? Like, Coleman Hawkins was the best defender in the league, and Terrence Shannon Jr. was a lockdown. I thought they were great defensively last year. I don't know where you're getting
that
from.
No, they were not. And I said that a lot to people. So you did not hear that from me, that they were great on defense. But in KenPom right now, they're 13th in defense and 33rd in offense, which that kind of surprised me. But, I mean, when you watch a play, they're out there and they're playing with a fast pace, but they are stopping teams. It's how they're able to get their lead overall. So, yeah. Any other thoughts on Illinois, Missouri?
Well, they're stopping most teams, right? I think there's a certain team that was also a rivalry game that had no business scoring 80 on Illinois, and I think they ended up scoring 80 on Illinois. Maybe I'm misremembering that. I don't know.
Scoring 80 on Illinois?
Yeah.
Oh, Wisconsin?
No, a purple team, I think.
No, Northwestern only scored 70.
Was it 70? No business scoring 70 then, maybe not 80. 70, okay.
Yeah, that was also
– that's what I get for trying to make a slam.
Yeah, that was also overtime too. And don't get caught in the Brooks zone, the Brooks Barnheiser zone. Can I do that yet? Can I change the Boo zone to the Brooks Barnheiser zone?
Yeah, you were talking about that earlier this week, that, you know, he's kind of become a player of the people, and I feel like Northwestern's always got one of those guys, because Northwestern's a school that, you know, while Illinois is a rival, they're not like a very hated team. Like, you know, when Northwestern does well, they're definitely one of those token, like, Big Ten teams where any other Big Ten fan sees them playing in the tournament, and they're definitely rooting for Collins and Northwestern. So when they have a star player like a Bowie or a Brooks Barnheiser, they definitely are a player of the people.
Yeah.
And his best friend's in the chat right now. Yeah.
As I said, Chris Collins, he's just a man of the people overall, so you can't get mad about it. So, all right.
Collins Russ, Corridor, I love it.
I think we put in a solid day's work here. Oh, and I did forget. I'm sorry. It is a rivalry game, so there is that aspect of that as well. I apologize, Sonny. I meant to mention that at the beginning, but I forgot to say rivalry game. There we go. Brooks Barnheiser, friend of the program.
Yeah, he's working hard to get in the comments than he does actually in the videos.
Well, I was going to say at the end of this episode, unfortunately, we won't have a video on Monday because neither Kent or I can be there Monday morning for a video. So we won't have a Power Rankings episode this Monday. We obviously will still post our Power Rankings on, X and Twitter and everything over there. So you can catch those there, but we won't be able to have an episode Monday. And I think we should still have a Thursday episode next week, but there will not be a Tuesday episode because that's Christmas Eve, and as much as I love podcasting, should probably spend time with my family on Christmas Eve instead of podcasting. So
probably a good idea. Yeah, if we want to see you back here.
I might lose everything if I don't do that. So Russ, you want to tell people where they can find the Boiler Express podcast?
Yeah, anywhere you find podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, just search Boiler Express, you'll find us out there. Just a bunch of guys talking about Purdue sports. I know everybody loves that, so
everybody loves that. Who couldn't love that? Who couldn't love that? Yeah, Phillip's right. Brooks just needs his two front teeth.
Oh, yes. I'm glad Kent said that, too. So, big game tomorrow. Huddle Online Dynasty. Kent and myself, we play tomorrow afternoon. I'll try to – I know he's all worried about streaming because everybody – he thinks everybody's trying to watch and get notes on him. So, I'll try to find some place to stream it tomorrow. But, yeah, big game between Kent and I.
I watch Kent sometimes when he streams.
Yeah.
So I'm taking notes.
He's all right. He's all right.
If I ever join the league, I'm taking notes. I'm learning his tendencies. John says going to have some big decisions to make between Notre Dame and IU on who to support. Have you made your decision yet? Who are you rooting for in this one, Russ?
Yeah, they those IU basketball and Notre Dame football fans that I grew up with all those years, they got to figure out which side of that reversible jacket to have on the outside this weekend. It's going to be tough for them. I feel real sorry for them. I mean, there's not a team I can root for in that game. I'm rooting for the Meteor. I'm rooting for, it's just such an abomination of football that they put the loser of Ohio State, Tennessee in the next round. Yeah, I don't know, man. Yeah, that's definitely the reversible jacket game for sure. I saw somebody say it's the battle for Little Sebastian, if you guys are Parks and Rec fans out there.
Yeah, saw that too. That was perfect. Often not, it says, I can't have this. Burke on the show last week says, I cannot have this football season end. Six, Woodson's best distraction.
I will say, one interesting aspect of this home playoff games is I've seen a lot of noise on both the Tennessee fan bases and the Indiana fan bases on buying up tickets to try to make it as much of a neutral site as what they can. So I'm going to be very interested to see what these games look like because there's been a lot of, pumped up media, a bunch of hype around these home playoff games, but are they actually going to be locked out home playoff games, or are we going to be surprised with how many away fans actually show up to these games?
Have you heard what the college football playoffs is like making them do for the home games and stuff, with like how they're like making them play videos for the opposing team and all this stuff and everything?
Oh, negative. No, I mean, it's football. Purdue fans have tried to move on as much as they can. Yeah.
I was wondering if you had heard any of that. No, there. So it's been a big talking point for Ohio State because, they have to play so many videos in favor of Tennessee or something like that because it's still a college football playoff game. And so Ohio State found out once everything happened, like their normal sponsors and stuff, they're not gonna have time to like play their ads for their normal sponsors because they're gonna have to take a lot of that time and like play stuff for Tennessee and stuff like that. And then the same thing happened with Notre Dame, where like Notre Dame normally, highlights something in the school or something like that during that time, but they're gonna have to play stuff for Indiana instead. So it is a home game still, don't get me wrong, but college football playoff committee is kind of taking it over a little bit.
The NCAA just can't get out of their way, can they? Like, they can't get out of their own way. Like, we get something awesome and they want to water it down a little bit. Like, that's disappointing.
Yeah. No, I agree. Thankfully, the NCAA will be obsolete in like 2 or 3 years. So, Let's hope. All right, Russ, appreciate you coming on. Thank you, everybody, for listening and watching. We appreciate it. We will have a recap episode, me and Zach, of the Indiana-Notre Dame game going live right afterward tomorrow night. We will have a Sunday recap episode of everything that went on in the playoffs. So if Ohio State loses and you want to hear me and Zach both be very upset, you can come in for that one. And if Ohio State wins and you want to hear us be happy, come in for that one as well. So you're going to get either super happy JR and Zach or super sad JR and Zach. So that'll be fun for you there. And then, like I said, no Monday power ranking show and no Tuesday show as well. We will possibly be back next Thursday. I got to see if we're going to be able to do that, but we'll possibly be back for that, and we'll let you know. So thanks, everybody, for watching. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a good one.